The next topic, English metaphysicals. Introduction. The term metaphysical as applied to Donne and his follower is more or less a misnomer. However, it has come to stick. It was Dryden who first applied the term in relation to Donne's poetry. He affected, complained Dryden, the metaphysics not only in his satire but in his amorous verse. Dr. Johnson borrowed Dryden's ideas and in his life of Cowley. Called Cowley, poet of the metaphysical school of Donne, he'd write Cowley's pedantic exhibition of his learning and vocabulary in his poem, but the exhibition of their learning was only one of the many characteristics of the metaphysical poets. Their love of the daring imagery in the enigmatic expression, a peculiar sensualism uneasily wedded to a mystical conception of religion, their intellectualism and taste for the expression of novel ideas in a novel manner were some other qualities. The term metaphysical denote, according to Sainsbury, the habit common to this school of poets of always seeking to express something after something behind and simple, obvious first sense and suggestion of a subject. In this way, Donne and his followers strike a note of variance from Spenser and Spenserian and Elizabethan poetry in general. Composite quality. According to Grierson, metaphysical poetry in the full sense of the term is a poetry which, like Dante, Divine Comedy and Goethe, fasts. Has been inspired by a philosophical conception of the universe and the role assigned to the human spirit in the great drama of existence. It arises when the physical world loses its stability and the people lose faith in the orthodox pattern of thought and belief. At such times, sensitivity poets turn their intention inward and through self-analysis aim at better understanding of themselves, their situation in the world, and their relation to a philosophic and idealized other world. The age in which Donne lived witnessed a gradual crumbling of the old order of things, the disturbing progress of science, and the skepticism which went with it. The new philosophy, said Donne, call all in doubt. The realization that the earth is not the center of the universe and the inference that man is not the greatest of all creatures dealt a rude blow to the orthodox Christian complacency. Donne's search for some principle of coherence in the world of chaos led him to the reconciliation of opposites, resolution of doubt, and the integration of the world of reality with the world of the imagination of sensual cynicism and high-flown mysticism, and even of carnal and spiritual longings. This led him surely to the employment of what have been doubted, metaphysical conceit, and an occasional display of out-of-the-way recondite learning. And the subtler points of his feeling found outlet quite often in obscure the enigmatic expression which has been delight of some and the despair of many readers. In spite of Donne obscurity and persistence intellectualism, it may be said to his credit as a love poet that he imported into English love poetry a vigorous element of hard realism, which sometimes amounts even to cynicism. In this respect, he scored a big advance over Spenser and his school, who glorified platonic love and celebrated almost unearthly and highly conventional mysticism of Petrarchan tradition. Donne's lead was accepted by a large number of poets succeeding him. Among them may be mentioned Herbert, Vaughan Crewe, Crossa, Thurston's early Milton, and Cowley. These poets are often classed together as metaphysical or metaphysical poets. Apart from them, the influence of Donne and his school may also be disconcerted in the work of sizable number of poets who flourished in the Caroline period. In fact, the metaphysical vein was in evidence as a major current in the stream of English poetry till the age of Dryden, when it gave place to neoclassicism ushered in by him. Now let us consider some salient characteristics of the poetry of the metaphysical school. Undissociated sensibility. The most important characteristic of the metaphysical is their possession of or striving after what T.S. Eliot called undissociated sensibility, the combination of thought and feeling, which Milton was to supplant later. However, Professor L.C. Knight, in his essay Bacon and the Dissociation of Sensibility in Exploration, puts forward the view that sensibility came to be dissociated much earlier by Bacon. The metaphysical are constantly amalgamating disparate experience and forming new wholes out of materials so diverse as reading Spinoza, falling in love, and smelling the dinner's cooking. Donne has the knack of presenting together different objects which have between them a quite remote though undeniable similarity. He connects the abstract with the concrete and remote with the near and the physical with the spiritual and the sublime with the commonplace, and sometime during moment of the most serious meditation breaks into a note and sardonic humor and pathetic frivolity. This juxtaposition and sometimes interfusion and apparently dissimilar or exactly opposite object often pleasantly thrill us into a new perception of reality. And Donne says Havertz is a thrilling poet. Donne wrote, "Oh, to vex me, contraries meet in one. Inconstancy naturally hath begot a constant habit." These contraries meeting in Donne's poetry vex not only the poet but also sometimes his readers. His successor handles with these contraries rather crudely, with very unpleasant effects. Metaphysical wit and conceits. Dr. Johnson was the first critic to point out the tendency of the metaphysical poet to yoke radically different images possibly together. This tendency arose, according to T.S. Eliot, from their undissociated sensibility. But it may be objected that Donne and his followers do not really seem to be serious and spontaneous in the tendency noted by Dr. Johnson. When Donne compares a pair of lovers to a pair of compasses, is he not speaking with his tongue in cheek? Such a tendency is a true manifestation of the metaphysical wit. Hobbes, in his Leviathan, defined wit as the capability to find out similarities between things which may look every dissimilar, when Crewe said that Donne ruled as he thought fit, the universal monarchy of wit. He was most probably referring to wit in this sense. All the metaphysical have an incorrigible aptitude for witty comparisons, juxtaposition and imagery, and what may be called the metaphysical conceit. Some strained or far-fetched comparison or figure of speech Dr. Johnson defined as the wit of the metaphysical as a kind of discordia concurs, combination of dissimilar images. Let us consider some instance of this discordia concur. In Donne's Twickenham Garden, we meet this with the expression spider love. Now we are used to splendid decorative or moving image in the connection with the subject of love, but the word spider is quite contrary to our expectation. In the same poem, the lovers' tears are called the vine of love. The poet invites lover to come equipped with fields to collect these tears. And another poem we have to very quaint line, a holy thirsty dropsy melt me it. The word holy is highly serious. Thirsty stands for a simple physical need, and dropsy, the name of disease, has a clinical twang. Again, consider the line, go tell court huntsman, then the king will write, call country ants to harvest offices. See how the king and the country ants are juxtaposed. Lordness. The poetry of the metaphysical has the impress of very vast learning. Whatever be the demerit of the metaphysical poet, even Dr. Johnson had to admit that for writing such poetry, it was at least necessary to think and read. However, it may be said that this poetry is brain sprung, not heartfelt. It is intellectual and witty to a fault. Dr. Johnson noted that the metaphysical poet sometimes drew with conceit from recesses of learning not very much frequented by common reader of poetry. Learning is an asset for a poet. Our quarrel with the metaphysicals is not that they are learned, but that sometimes they show off their learning just to impress the reader. An imaginative and learned writer, says Edmund Blunden, calls for annotation, but the object of his difficult allusion is to give shape to his idea of the word, of the soul, not to decide matter of astronomy, physics, geography, and natural history. Many of Donne's followers do not always prove so imaginative, paradoxical ratiocination. According to Grierson, the hallmark of metaphysical poetry are passionate feeling and paradoxical ratiocination. The same critic observed that the metaphysical exhibited deductive reasoning carried to a high pitch. Too often does Donne state at a beginning of a poem of hopelessly unsupportable proposition, which he defends soon after, consider the poem The Indifferent, which opens as below. I can love both fair and brown. Whatever qualities a woman has are made into so many reasons for loving her. Again, note this in his poem, The Broken Heart. He is stark mad, whoever sees that he hath been in love one hour. With his tremendous ratiocinative ability, Donne defends his proposition in The Flea. The proposition presented to the mistress is, this flea is you and I, and this our marriage bed and marriage temple is. It seems an unpromising subject, but there are 27 lines to packed argument to drive it home. This excessive intellectualism not often makes for obscurity. See, for instance, the following clever lines. You that are C and you, that's double C, and her deed face half of yourself shall see. Commenting on these, Tucker Brook says, the meaning can be made out, but the satisfaction of his mental ingenuity in so doing is the only reward the reader will receive. Lucas complained, Donne treats poetry as a trapeze for mental frisk. Clay Hunt disapproves such pyrotechnics of wit. Diction and versification. In style and versification, Donne and his followers reacted against the cloying sweetness and harmony of the school of Spenser and metaphysical, deliberately avoided conventional poetic expression as they had lost their meaning through overuse. According to Wordsworth, the language of poetry should be the natural language of the impassioned feeling, the metaphysical employed by very prosaic words, as if they were scientists or shopkeepers. The result is that in their work we often stumble against ragged and unpoetic word we seldom expect in serious poetry. The versification of the metaphysical is also like their diction, coarse and jerky in contrast to the unhoneyed smoothness of much of Elizabethan poetry. Their revolt, according to Grierson, is due to two motives. The desire to settle, first, the desire to settle, and second, the desire to approximate poetic to direct unconventional colloquial speech. Dunn could sing whenever he liked, but often he seems to be bending and cracking the metrical pattern to the rhetoric of direct and vehement utterance. He very often threw all prosodic consideration to the winds and distributed his stresses not according to the meter but according to the sense. In his work, says Tucker Brooke, the Pierian flood is no clear spring. It is more like a Yellowstone geyser, overheated, turbid, explosive, and far from pure. Dunn and other metaphysical metrical infelicity had been adversely commented upon by all. But to be fair, we may say that Dunn writer as one who will says what he has to say without regard to the conventions of poetic diction or smooth verse. But what he has to say is subtle and surprising, and so are often the metrical effects with which it is presented. Religious poetry of the metaphysical. Most of the metaphysical poets wrote and wrote on religion. Indeed, we owe most of our good religious poetry to them. It must be emphasized that all the metaphysical do not write exactly alike. All of them are strongly marked individuals. The English metaphysical poetry form done to Treherne should be treated not as a type but as a movement. Dunn religious poetry has all the qualities we have detailed above. Herbert followed Dunn in most respect. He has been called the saint of the metaphysical school. His approach to God and Christ is full of what Edmund Gosse called intimate tenderness, but he does use the imagery and conceit of the Dunnian type. His temple was the most popular Anglican poem of the age. Herbert had two distinguished followers, Wagon and Crossa. They acknowledged their debts to Herbert, but they had temper fundamentally their own. Wagon, V-A-U-G-S-A-N, is temperamentally a mystic, though he uses conceit after the manner of Dunn and Herbert, conceit such as stars set up shop. When the arrival of the morning is described, he is at his best while dealing with such themes as childhood. The remaining part of this topic in next file.